This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 7, Episode 27, Bouncing Back. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the England-Pakistan series, what you can learn about bouncing back from failure into success. We also talk about switching on and off between balls when you're a batsman, and we help a player get into three-day cricket. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket for half an hour or so. We're here to help you out. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and helping me to help you are two very fine cricket coaches, the first of which is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
Bonjour.
Still in France, are you?
Yeah, too right, on the way to Paris, mate.
Oh, lovely.
Last couple of days.
Yeah.
Bit of Paris action, and then back for Sportfest at the weekend at Wormsley. So looking forward to that.
It's all go. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School, although currently living a luxurious life of leisure. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello there. Extremely luxurious. There are no Parisian cafes within walking distance of where I am, though, unfortunately.
Oh, that's a shame.
Actually, I tell that's a lie. There is actually a cafe called Café Parisien, so I withdraw all previous comments.
Well, I'm on the A10 at the service station, so you're closer to Paris than I am presently, mate.
Well, on that bombshell, let's go into the world of cricket instead. I was keeping up with the England team, as I often do around this time of year. And of course, there's been quite a series of results for England and Pakistan in the current series. The first, Pakistan won pretty easily, and the second, England won pretty easily. So I thought maybe we can have a look at that and see if there's any lessons that we can learn both from the English viewpoint of bouncing back to victory and from the Pakistan viewpoint of starting well and then losing that magic word, momentum. So, Gareth, what have you been keeping up with the series, and what have you thought about this change of fortunes for the teams?
Yeah, I have been keeping up with the series. It's always going to be a good one, wouldn't it? I think, you know, two sides, I wouldn't say are evenly matched. I think England have got Pakistan in English conditions covered, but a fascinating start of a series with Pakistan playing brilliantly in that first game and ultimately England failing in that first game. And I think what was very encouraging for me was some of the language that came out of that first game from an England perspective, and how they wanted to go about playing the rest of the series, and in particular how they were going to go about playing against Sharma, leg spinner, as well. It obviously helped having Jimmy Anderson back bowling on his home ground, you know, being the leader of attack. That's definitely a help for England, and that's one of the reasons why they won. Having Ben Stokes back, although he picked up a bit of an injury, you know, having him back in the side, I think, was a good thing for them as well. But also having the confidence to play both Wokes and Stokes in the same team after Wokes' brilliant form in recent times. It looks like a really good side that they can put together now. But the most important thing, I think, was that they looked at the failure of that first test match, really said to themselves, okay, this is a bit of a kick in the backside. This is telling us we've got to go about it differently, especially to the leg spinner, who's going to bowl a lot of overs within their bowling attack. How are we going to play him differently? And certainly in the first innings, it looked from the highlights that I watched that they tried to play him a lot straighter than they did at Lord's, and only went really cross-batted when he erred in length, so got a bit short so they could pull and cut him. But more importantly, when they played front foot, they played him back from where he came from, hit him either side of extra cover and mid-off a lot in Joe Root's case, and mid-wicket and mid-on side for Cookie. So I just thought that the way that they played him was brilliant and set up the victory, to be honest. And then in the second innings, you know, they did bring some more cross-batted stuff into play as the wicket deteriorated, which is just good common sense batting. But they looked at their failures from the first game, and they put some strategies and some techniques in place which would give them a better chance of success in the second, and it worked.
So, Lavis, what can a coach or a team who are playing at a different level, a school team, a club team, that kind of level, what can they learn from that kind of process of going from the a failure into a success?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to be aware that a failure is always there as an opportunity to learn from, isn't it? So if we perform well or if we perform poorly, we're always looking to improve. And that's been shown not only in the way England have bounced back and they've maybe slightly adapted their plans and their approach to the way they played against Sri Lanka, but also in the way individuals are constantly trying to refine what they're doing. And obviously there's been a lot of publicity about Moeen Ali and how he's trying to adapt because he's found that his pace maybe isn't suited to certain conditions, and maybe at Old Trafford in particular, where there's a bit more pace and bounce than there was at Lord's, he can maybe take a bit of pace off, etc. But I think constantly looking forward and being aware of what's happened, being aware of things we've got right and things we've got wrong. And England did get a few things wrong, and Pakistan got a load of things wrong as well along the way. But being aware of them and then trying to work out, right, how can we make changes and how can we apply relevant changes to the conditions and the situation in the match that's coming up ahead? Because if we just try and correct everything for what we did at Lord's, it's then a different surface and we've got to do things a different way, and we'll end up then being reactive when we get there. So it's gaining a bit of awareness of how the opposition perform. And I think in this instance, and this is something that has been spoken about by Michael Atherton a hell of a lot over the last couple of years, but again in the last few days, is this kind of cycle of playing against the same team over and over again, which is something that doesn't happen so much in club cricket or school cricket or whatever it might be. But when you get to play against the same side, and I think I'm right in saying they've played six, well, it'll have been a number of tests in a row since November when they were playing them abroad. You trying to bank that information and learn about as much as about the opposition as you can, and you can see that England are using that information well. England are learning from it and are making plans that are going to stand them instead for this game, the next game, the game after, and maybe Pakistan's planning or organisation or ability to respond to plans or execute ideas isn't quite as good as England's at the moment, who have responded very well. And obviously some of the England guys could do with a few runs, but a couple of the Pakistan guys are probably looking like they're on their way out if there's a replacement in place there. So really good bit of planning and adaptation to what they're up against now they've seen Pakistan and England, because I guess a lot of people have watched a lot of Test cricket and you always see the opposition, but no one's seen Pakistan or this Pakistan side in England. So there probably was a little bit of a shot in the dark about how Yasir and some of the others would bowl in these conditions.
It's an interesting question, really, when it comes to planning and when something goes wrong and when to decide when to stick or when to twist. You know, is it that you're plan was wrong and you need a better plan, or was it that your plan was right and you didn't quite execute on your plan well enough? And that's a challenge, isn't it, especially for guys who are perhaps only coming together once a week?
Yeah, it's a tough one when you're only practicing that once a week, or when you're just coming together to play. That's a tough one to do. But I think that's where it becomes an individual thing, doesn't it? And it, you know, if you are going through a patch where you haven't scored any runs, and there's a consistency in the way, say, you're getting out, or a consistency as a bowler and where you're getting hit, then it's very easy to sort of ignore that and just say, oh yeah, you know, the pitches haven't been great, or this, that, and the other. But I think the people that that review best are the ones that go, okay, so what am I not doing well here? Well, actually, I've been hit square of the wicket hell of a lot recently. So, you know, when I do practice, or even without practice, just visualizing yourself pitching the ball up a little bit more, visualizing where that ball's going to go when it goes off the bat, visualizing success is going to have a more positive effect, and probably going to run over into how you bowl when you go about your business next time round. And you know, we know for a fact, because there's been loads of bits of research done, that if that preparation happens even just in a mental state, if it's done well enough, then it has a positive effect on performance. And that's what club players, I think, can get out of this example of looking at failure, being able to plan accordingly, being able to mentally put that work in, and then to pitch up the next Saturday, even if they haven't hit a ball or bowled a ball, but actually doing that work in the interim period can have a huge benefit come around the performance on the following Saturday. But in order to do it, you've got to be honest. You've got to look at failure as an opportunity, as Sam says, and if you can do that, then you're going to give yourself a better chance of success.
That actually takes me back to something that Gareth said, maybe going back six or seven weeks now, which is what's the overriding factor in a player's life that kind of takes them towards success? Is it the coach they have? Is it the system they're part of? Is it the training sessions they're in? And ultimately, it's the individual themselves and how willing they are to take on what they're doing beyond the general cricket environment they're in. How much further are they willing to think and challenge themselves and push what they're doing themselves as an individual rather than relying on others around them? Which I think is a great point, because if you look at those guys who are successful, it's largely contributed to by other things, but it's down to themselves.
And just to build on that, if you look at Joe Root's performance from one test match to the next, yes, he attributes the training that he's done with players, but the fact was that it's a back-to-back test match, that there's not a lot of time in between the two games in order to get that practice. England aren't exactly blessed. I know Rash was added to the squad. Probably Rash was added to the squad so they could face leg spin, I should imagine, leading up to. I could never see them playing two spinners at Old Trafford in this test match, but he was added to the squad, so they got to face a bit of him. But ultimately, most of Joe Root's work would have been done by himself mentally in those times away from practices, putting his mindset into how he was going to play Shah over the course of the test match, and how that would adapt over the time that the pitch would deteriorate. And he absolutely nailed it. You know, 313 runs in a test match is, you know, it's a hell of a lot of runs, and you know, good on him. But it does come down to that individual, definitely. The system's great. England have got fantastic coaches around them, but you know, you're only as good as that player wants to take advantage of that and do a bit more. And he did that exactly there.
Okay, let's finish up this section with the yes/no round. That's three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more the team want to say. I've got the question, so let's fire away. First question. You make more chances than you're given.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Overconfidence is better than realistic expectations.
No.
No.
Third question. The most essential thing for a coach is understanding skill acquisition.
No.
No.
And now it's time for the questions section on the show. Pretty simple format. We answer some questions that have been sent in by listeners to the podcast, or maybe readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. And then we decide on the best question of the week, which wins a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And if you want to send in your question, you can email coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll tell you about other ways of getting in touch with us towards the end of the show. So Dale sent in a question to us, and Dale says, I've read a lot about switching on and off between balls to preserve mental energy and how top players use routines to focus. But when I try and put this into practice during games, I either find myself trying to focus on too many things at once, or my mind wanders and I lose focus on watching the ball properly. And quite often I don't realise this is the case until I've already missed a chance. And then that begins a vicious cycle where I struggle to concentrate further because I'm too busy worrying about what everyone else thinks of me. Please could you offer me some advice on how to build routines that actually work and how to put mistakes behind me so they don't further affect my game?
Well, there's a lot in that question, and I'm going to try and answer the first bit first and maybe chuck it over to Sam and then come back because we've got a fair bit of content to work with there. First, about switching on and off. Now, switching on and off is a really interesting concept. My preference, and again, this is only a preference, so I'm not saying that this is verbatim and everybody has to do it, but my preference is that people don't switch on and off, but they switch their focus up and down. It's like a dimmer switch on a light, really. And the reason why I say that is that there's enough research out there to tell me that actually as soon as we switch our concentration off, it actually is quite an inefficient thing to then start it up again. We lose a lot of energy. It's a bit like starting a car, I suppose. The most inefficient time for a car is right at the outset as the engine's warming up. So switching it up and down is probably a better thing for me. The second thing I'd say is that it's not easy to practice this as a skill out in the middle alone. And yes, that skill out in the middle of alone can be enhanced, but ultimately what we're looking to do is we're looking to put our practice of concentration into net sessions, into fielding sessions, whatever the case may be. And as a batter in nets in particular, you are the most perfectly placed person to decide the frequency, how often, when the bowler runs into bowl. And the best players that I've worked with aren't the ones that necessarily just have that conveyor belt approach to facing bowlers in nets, but actually the ones that build their concentration, their focus, their routines into their net practice, as well as doing it on bowling machines as well. You know, bowling machines isn't always about let's see how many balls that I can face over the course of an hour practice session. It's about getting each one of those shots as good as they possibly can be, and often that comes down to the refocusing. What did I learn from the previous ball? How am I going to go about my business for this next time? So when we're grooving with quality rather than grooving just to build up numbers. I would say, firstly, use a dimmer switch. Secondly, practice it not out in the middle. If I said to you, right, I want you to start reverse sweeping, I wouldn't expect you to go out there and start doing it in a game for the first time. I'd want to help you to build up some practice. So maybe talk to your coaches or talk to your other players about you controlling the pace and the frequency of deliveries in nets and starting to build that process in a safer environment than out in the middle. That would be the starting point.
So Lathers, let's develop that a little bit and say that he does start working on those things, but he's got a game coming up straight away, so he hasn't got time to work on it, but he's going out into the middle. What can we give him, any strategies, any quick strategies that might help him stay focused on watching the ball and not get caught up in his own mind?
Absolutely. Well, I think the great idea is try not to switch off completely, first of all. So I've spoken a little bit about having... being aware of information when you're in your little bit of downtime, but then seeking information when you're really focusing and looking for the ball again. So when you are stepping away, and you watch guys on TV do it all the time, you'll see the likes of your David Warners and people like that who undo their gloves every single ball, undo their gloves, little walk away. That's their relaxation time. They're still holding a level of awareness, so they're not just off daydreaming, looking into the distance, which I've played with a couple of guys who do that, and they found it works for them. Again, it's what works for you. But that's the classic one: is gloves undone, walk away, gloves back on, and then you're coming back in. So I'd like to say, try and maintain awareness of what's going on. And if you want to undo your gloves to go with that, or if you want to have some kind of trigger that physically matches with that, then that's something you could do. It won't work for everyone, but some people like to associate it with a physical aspect like that, which is quite a simple one to do. And then once you're back in, so what I'd say is once we're back in the box, so we're back in our stance effectively, and we're then in the position where we're trying to get information, and we're starting to zone in and tune in, and we're taking that level of awareness up, and we're turning on the bright lights there, and we're trying to look at the ball and trying to get real close, narrow information back on what the bowler's about to do. is when we're going to zone in again. So it could be that simple. Gloves undone or done up, and then out of the box or in the box. And they're just some really simple techniques that people have used lots of, and they could be the things that work for you. But even if it doesn't work for you, you can take the idea of those kind of things and say, actually, what is my routine? If you don't walk away from the stumps and you don't want to do that and it feels like it's a bit alien to you, then think about something you can do in the space that you're in, and use the space or use the things that you like to do and try and associate them with taking that level of awareness a little bit up a bit and a little bit down a bit. So it's about finding the right thing for you, but a simple strategy and associating with a physical thing is often something that people like to do.
I think it's really important that that this is treated as a skill in exactly the same way as an off drive or a pull shot, and it has to be practiced. And yes, it doesn't help you necessarily straight away in that game on Saturday, but what it will do, if you practice it enough and you do that net thing that we talked about, then over the period of weeks and months, you'll start to feel that it becomes an automatic thing rather than becoming another distraction on top of all of those distractions that we've inevitably got when we're performing out in the middle, either as a batter, a bowler, or as a fielder.
I think that's a great area to practice. Well, in the field, when there's maybe a little bit less focus on you and a little bit less awareness of what you're doing there, but you can start training your brain in this way and trying to have this ritualistic or routine effects that you're going to bring into every delivery, and you're guaranteed to have, well, you might not be guaranteed to get 50 overs if you're in a one day game, but you're probably going to get a big chunk if you're out in the field, regardless of how long the game lasts. So there's a massive opportunity to try things out there and work out what works for you and what you enjoy doing and how complicated and difficult or very simple you'd like it to be, because we've all seen some complicated routines and we've all seen some easy ones. I'm not sure what's the most complicated routine you've seen. Did you remember seeing Jai Saria's routine?
Yeah, I mean, he was classic. I mean, he'd be touching literally all sorts of bits, and we used to there was a little song which I can't remember that we did at Somerset, because he played for me for 3 months. Absolute classic character. Adore a bit of Sanap. He's a beauty. But Ian Blackwell, I think, made up a little bit of a tune about the different nudges and touches and whatever that he was doing up and down his body and on his bat handle and all of that sort of stuff. It was absolutely brilliant. But I can't remember it now. I'll have to. It's another excuse to go out for a pint with Blackie to try and recall that.
Speak
song.
To Blackie and see if you can get some. See if you can get some insight into that. See if we can get him on as a special guest to sing.
Oh, Blackie would be all over that, mate. Whether he'd sing or not. He was good. He actually made... we're going horribly off subject, but Blackie made up the team song in 2005, which was to the Amarillo one, you know, the thing that Peter Kay put out. Which was just absolutely brilliant. It was all Somerset language, and I think Andy Claddick's flying of various machines got in there somehow as well. So Blackie, if you ever want a sporting song made up, Blackie is your man.
Let's get back on topic with another question from Rian. And Rian says, it's a short one. Do you have any information or guides on how to do a net session for 3-day game preparation?
Yeah, it's brilliant. And it sounds to me as if you're a fairly newcomer to 3-day cricket. And it's a different game in many respects, but obviously we've got to remember that in isolation each ball is exactly the same game as the one that you've been working on the whole of your life to get yourself to a point where you can play this huge long game. So firstly, you don't need to get overly specific. I think the difference in 3-day cricket for me is the amount of starts that you have to have as a batter and the amount of starts that you have to have as a bowler. But let's say about batting specifically here. Those first 20 balls are crucial. in any innings, we know. But if you're going to bat for any long period of time, if you're going to have an impact on a game, say in the way that Joe Root did the other day, you're going to have to start sessions regularly. You're going to have a load of drinks breaks. You're going to have a load of times where a wicket will fall at the other end. And it is about, you know, restarting or just recalibrating a little bit. So to me, the real skill of 3- and 4- and 5-day cricket is having that ability to restart again, because the conditions can change, the bowler can change, the ball can change, and things do differ, and it's about giving yourself that best opportunity. So how do we practice that in nets? Then we go in there, we go and say, right, instead of batting for 4 hours, because nobody ever bats for 4 hours in one slot, instead of doing that, let's have a 20-minute session, let's face 30 balls, and let's judge ourselves on the ability for us to deal with those 30 balls. So it might be 30 balls against a new ball on a new wicket. It might be 30 balls with two spinners bowling at you in the net and you simulating having two men around the bat and a man on the drive. All of these things can be really specifically done. And it doesn't mean to say that you learn to block it, because as we saw with Joe Root and Alistair Cook in the last test match, there wasn't a great deal of blocking going on. It's just that they worked their way through their first 20 balls of a session or an innings, then they worked their way through the first 20 balls of a partnership, worked their way through the first 20 balls of a drinks break, which often brings a wicket, and that's purely down to the fact that people don't switch back on or build themselves back up again, or they come back the next day, as in Joe Root's case, and bat again the following morning when the conditions may be completely different, or maybe complacency slips in. You know, he still has to go about his business, give himself a chance of getting 100 on the second day on the trot, which makes up a 250 plus score, which is what he got. So to me, that's the big thing, because you know how to hit a half volley, because you've done that in 50 over cricket. You know how to play a cut shot off a spinner, because you've done that in 20 over cricket and 50 over cricket. What you haven't been exposed to is those starts and building that tempo up. It was interesting to hear Alistair Cook talk about Joe Root's tempo and the way that he played at his tempo throughout, rather than getting too carried away until maybe the end of his innings and going more into one day mode.
Davis, have you ever helped anyone prepare for a longer format cricket when they're not used to it?
Well, I think that's what we end up doing quite a lot of, really, because obviously working in a school, we get lots of guys who are coming through a county program where they're moving from an under 12 at one stage, and eventually they get to a level where they start playing 2-day cricket, 3-day cricket, etc., as they get into second 11 cricket with the local county or whoever it may be, and that's suddenly this big jump from a real comfort zone in terms of not only the standard of cricket they're playing, where they're very used to and accustomed to playing club cricket and school cricket. Suddenly they jump into this new type of cricket where, first of all, the standard is probably a little bit higher than they've played before. And as you know, if you turn up to a county second 11 game, you can get some decent sides. Every now and then you'll get some mediocre sides when people need it resting a little bit. But you can often turn up and see half a dozen guys playing who've played first class cricket and guys who've played international cricket coming back from injury or having a bit of downtime, and they're trying to get some match practice in. So that, first of all, you've got that level of performance which can be out of your comfort zone a little bit. Then you're in new conditions often as well, so you find that those first class decks, or if you're a high quality outground, it might be a little bit more a little bit pacier, a little bit bouncier in terms of the surface than you're used to playing at a school or a club, and then obviously you've got the whole format which is completely different. So there's a lot to consider when making that step up, but again, you've got to think about where actually does your game need to change, and it might be that you're probably not going to be learning lots and lots of new skills, although we do often have a focus on prepping people a little bit more when it comes to back foot play, because that's something that starts to feed in more and more and more. I think a lot of guys grew up through school cricket or playing conditions often in club cricket where you can probably be very front foot dominant. So prepping people back foot plays a big thing when they're getting ready for that. And then and then thinking about how they're going to manage their time, how they're going to manage their way through a session, or hopefully if it gets to that, a series of sessions. And again, finding the tempo in a new game. We talked about Joe Root's tempo there, and he's playing the test match. It's very different for guys who are bred on 50 over cricket and 20 over cricket these days to then go and play that first game of 3-day cricket or whatever it might be with a second 11. So it is a step up, but think about what actually does change rather than worrying about trying to improve things that you've already got. And that's kind of what Gareth said before. You don't necessarily need to learn new physical skills. It's applying your skills to a new way and making sure you've got a method that you can utilise in this new environment, which is a different format and different conditions.
Normally at this point on the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show, of course, we have the soapbox, which is an uninterrupted 60 seconds. But this week we're going to do something slightly different. I'm lucky enough to have on the line a special guest, Kiyati Gilani from India. Hi, Kiyati. How's it going?
Hi, I'm good.
Just for those of us who don't know, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, I've played for my state as well as for my zone as opening batswoman, and also I've done my few courses in cricket coaching. That's like NIS from here as well as BCCI qualified I am, and since then I'm into cricket coaching at club level, academy level to the boys, and at state level and zone level to the girls.
Fantastic. So you're in a really good position to understand the differences between the men's game and the boys' game and the women's game and the girls' game. So in your mind, what do you see as the big differences between men's cricket and women's cricket?
Basically, if you'll see the strength between the two. So that's the main difference, which is, being seen like the power of hitting the ball to the boundaries and all. So it's a lot of difference between the strength and conditioning of the girls and men's. Because of that the viewership is a little less in women's cricket. So because they would like to see more and more of boundaries and happenings on the ground, which is not seen in women's cricket. So that's the main difference.
Does that or any other factor change the way that girls and boys, men and women are coached? Or does the coaching stay broadly the same?
Earlier, yes, I could say that there was a lot of difference in coaching level as well, and society as well. If you'll say that society never accepted women's to play the cricket, but now society have also accepted, parents have also accepted, and girls are also coming out to play. And if you'll see that at ICC level, BCCI level, everywhere they are getting the same level of coaching. So there is little difference in skills because it's mainly a male dominant game everywhere. So it's been like that always. So girls have little, hitch about it, like they have little less power to, convert the boundaries. And if you'll say skill level also, girls are little behind than boys in the same thing. So these are the main factors which is, not giving more exposure to the girls in this game.
So I guess the next challenge then is to bring the popularity of the women's game up so it starts to become more acceptable for women and girls to play cricket and watch cricket and make the game healthier all round.
Yeah, that's right. It all depends on the viewership. If there are more viewership that channel is getting, then definitely they will showcase women's cricket as well. But as you can see that the interesting part which viewers want to see, that is not seen in women's cricket. They want fast cricket. They want conversion of boundaries more often during one match. So that's why these channels are not showing women's cricket on TVs. So that's the main problem. So once we'll get more viewership in the same thing, so definitely popularity will be there.
And that is all we've got time for on the show this week. There's just one more thing we need to do before we leave, and that is decide on the winner of this week's competition. That is the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And the two questions available to win the prize are Dale's question about switching on and off between balls and focusing while he's batting, and Rian's question about playing three-day cricket. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
Two top questions. I'm going to go with Dale's this week. I thought, A, it was brilliantly detailed, gave us a lot of different angles to go in on. But, you know, it's a huge part of the game, isn't it? Concentration. The game that we play for a minimum period of 3 hours, you know, concentration's crucial, isn't it? And I thought that was a cracker.
Congratulations to you. And, Gareth, if someone was listening into the show and decided they want to have their chance to win the prize and also get their question answered, how could they get in touch with us?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. There's also social media available. You can find us on Facebook by going to facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and our Twitter is @pitchvisionacad. You can also listen to the show every week. You can do that automatically by going to your favourite podcast app, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, finding us in there and tapping on the subscribe button. That's free, comes out every Friday. And if you want to get the show notes, or you want to download the show, or you want to stream it from the Pitch Vision website, you can do that no problem at all. Go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details on how to do that. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.